Everybody, and welcome again to week four, our fourth episode of A Yankee and King Regal's Court. How are you doing today, Tack?
Yeah, doing really good. Not as half asleep as I usually am. So yeah, I've had a busy week, but a slightly easier week than I've been recently, which is good.
Yeah, been a busy week for me. I know maybe luckily there's been a bit of a lull in the British wrestling scene after Wembley. And right now, it's just trying to catch up on, you know, getting my lesson plans ready. And luckily, you know, I was talking to you a little earlier about the Irish Civil War. I'm doing a real quick lesson on that. And luckily, you've helped me at least untangle a little bit of it.
Yeah, I don't envy you having to make anything quick out of that. It's a complicated affair, to say the least.
Yeah, so it's, I guess just England, Britannia, and the whole thing is kind of taking over my life right now between the podcast and teaching, you know, some Irish short stories and stuff like that. So it's quite the undertaking, but I love it. I love it. All right, so again, it's a bit of a lull. We got Wembley happen, and if you missed last week's episode, we break down the card pretty well. And so, you know, there's a little bit of a lull. There's not too many events. Everyone's kind of like letting that simmer. So, but we do have some big news coming out of WWE and World of Sport. But before we get into that, let's get into our opening segment, Brits Abroad, where we only have one match we're going to talk about, and that's Tegan Knox versus Nicole Matthews from, I believe this is week 6 of the Mae Young Classic. Tack, have you seen this yet?
No, I haven't watched it yet. Now, as always, I'm slightly behind on the Mae Young, which I'll literally watch it just after we record. So, I haven't caught up with that yet.
So Tegan Knox, for everyone that doesn't know, she formerly why am I blanking?
Nixon Newell.
Thank you. I don't know why I'm blanking right now. Nixon Newell, Welsh wrestler. Nixon Newell. She was signed by WWE a few years ago. She was originally slated in the Mae Young last year, but tore up her knee like right before the tournament.
Yeah, really badly as well. Yeah.
Yeah, she was out for I think like 9-10 months. She won her first match in the tournament, and you've seen her in person a few times, yeah?
Oh, loads of times. Yeah, she's one of the people that. I saw her so many places that you kind of get pally with them, and I'd always pop and say hello to her at shows, and she'd like save t-shirts for me and all sorts. She's genuinely one of the nicest people in pro wrestling. She's such a lovely person and a brilliant wrestler as well.
Yeah, she's pretty awesome. And what's pretty cool is in her like kind of hype video for like the matches, they'd show a couple of her progress stuff, and it's kind of weird because Triple H has come out and has been against intergender wrestling and kind of says this stuff, and it's almost like he's talking out both sides of his mouth, because in her hype video she's hitting a Canadian destroyer, or a Welsh destroyer in this case, on TK Cooper.
Yes.
And it's,
yeah, she almost kind of made her name here wrestling the guys, because she's quite petite as well, but she's really hard hitting, and quite a few times I saw her wrestle some of the fellas, and I mean, she always held her own every time.
And she was a pretty big mainstay in Fight Club Pro, right?
Yeah, she was big in Fight Club Pro. She was one of those girls who's everywhere. Like you'd see her on every level of show. Saw her at Fight Club Pro, Lucha Forever, sorry, and a few other places, Progress, obviously, and yeah, she got around a lot. I mean, she's still pretty young as well. Was she like 23, 24?
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah, and she's already a ring veteran. Like, she's got a lot of years under her belt already.
And so Tegan Knox, she wrestled Nicole Matthews, who Nicole Matthews in the first round dispatched of a Scottish wrestler, Isla Dawn, and in a pretty hard-hitting match. Did you watch that match yet?
Yeah, I did. Yeah, I really enjoyed that match, actually. Yeah,
And
I just watched that last Sunday.
what do you think of Nicole Matthews?
She's really impressive, actually. I didn't know a lot about her up until I saw her on the Mae Young. Yeah, and she's pretty impressive, actually. I mean, I obviously haven't seen this the Tegan Knox match yet, but what I've seen of her so far, I really liked.
Yeah, and Nicole Matthews I thought was really good against Isla Dawn, and that physicality kind of continued on against Tegan Knox. Tegan Knox, obviously played a bit of the underdog, wrestled a lot from underneath, but she was coming up. Tegan Knox was coming in with a lot of hype. I know Michael Cole said pretty much whenever he was on that she was his pick to win the tournament.
Yeah.
Which I think shows a lot of what they're kind of putting into Tegan Knox and, kind of hoping for her and her future. And I know she's been wrestling a lot with Dakota Kai.
Yes, their team.
Team
I can't think
Kick.
what they. Yeah, team. They didn't they give it like Team Shiny Kick or something like that
Oh,
to
yes, I
combine their
think
name,
so.
something like that. Yeah.
Right.
Because she's Nicole Matthews. She's Canadian, right?
Yes, from Vancouver
I think I
way.
have seen her work before in maybe Shimmer or somewhere like that. Now that I think about it, I've definitely seen her wrestle before somewhere, but I just can't put my finger on quite where. It might have been with Smash Wrestling or something like that, or Shimmer. I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, I think she has wrestled a lot with Shimmer, and kind of that, area, the Chicago area. And it might have been Smash too, because Smash is Canadian, although they're out of Toronto. But then I know they do use a lot of Canadian talent. But I thought the match was really good. Tegan Knox and Nicole Matthews, I think, kind of really lent each other to their styles, and they meshed really well. And Tegan Knox ended up getting the win with a Shining Wizard to pick up the win and move on. And she will face Riley, not Riley Reed. I don't know why I'm. Guys, I'm so sorry. My mind is bouncing around from the Irish Civil War. But she'll go on and to the next round. And unfortunately, I don't know if I'm gonna be able to watch that match. The spoilers, she ends up like tearing out her other knee.
Yeah, I
And
was going to say, I heard that she's got like a pretty severe injury, which isn't directly related to the other injury. So, yeah, a bit gutted for her from what I've heard. She's pretty badly hurt again.
yeah, from what I understand, it's like I think she tore up her ligaments on her healthy knee and kind of really set her back. And I know that was kind of like the big story out of the tapings for the Mae Young was that she was, and it seemed, like I said, it seems like she was really kind of coming along for a big push, and then to have that happen is really heartbreaking.
Yeah, I think she was kind of like semi working hurt because at the beginning of the year, she had like a minor injury. She was supposed to wrestle on a progress show.
Oh, that's right.
And she, last minute, she did some damage to her knee there. And we ended up getting to see Dakota Kai instead, which I had no problem with because I'd never seen Dakota Kai live before. But then it was not long after that that she hurt herself at the Mae Young. So. She's obviously all them shiniest wizards are doing something to, I mean, I don't know if maybe she needs a new finisher or something, but I mean, I feel bad for her. I hope it's not something that's going to sort of put her career back. Because obviously being injury prone can do a lot of damage to your career, especially at WWE. So
Yeah.
hopefully it doesn't hurt her too badly.
I hope not. I think it's going to be interesting to see how she bounces back. Obviously, with I think having already like a pretty major knee injury and then working back and getting to the level she was at, she was looking really good
Yeah.
in the two matches from the Mae Young this year. I think it shows, and she's like you said, she's also young, so obviously, you know, you can kind of bounce back a little easier at 23, 24 than you can when you're like 33, 34 and you have all these miles on you.
So, and she has a lot of natural talent as well, and she's got so much charisma that hopefully she can find a way to, I don't know if she's working in like stone cold knee braces or what, to try and find a way around these injuries keep happening, but hopefully she figures it out.
Right, and I think she does have enough charisma and enough like just natural talent that she can definitely kind of figure out a new style to kind of work around it. Maybe like a safer style. And I have never taken a bump, so I don't want to say like what is a safe style and what is not. Obviously, you know, anytime you're in something as physical as professional wrestling, like there are inherent dangers.
So, yeah, safe isn't really, they call a lot of things like safe work and stuff, but it's not really, there's no such thing really as though when it comes to wrestling. At some point, somebody's taking a big bump and getting hurt. It's just the way the industry is, I guess.
Yeah, no, definitely. So it'll be interesting to see. So like I said, that's been kind of the big thing coming out of the tapings. So that will pretty much leave Toni Storm as Britain, by way of Britain's lone representative moving forward after Tegan Nox's injury in the next match. So where do you think Toni Storm goes? Do you think she moves on? I think she's in the quarters now. And I think the big match on that side of the bracket is going to be Toni Storm versus Meiko Satomura, and I think that's where they're heading.
Yeah, that's going to be I really hope that's where they're heading, because that's going to be an all-out war. That could be match of the tournament, I think. I really hope Toni goes all the way. I think it'd be a huge rub for her, and with the UK tournament, the UK show heating up, I think it'd be a really good, like, to have the Mae Young winner going into that show. I think it'd be really good.
Yeah, I think so too. I think, you know, if you can get a lot of heat on Toni Storm going into WWE UK being, NXT UK as, you know, like kind of giving them like a face that they can get behind. Even though like Toni Storm really doesn't need a lot of heat, she already has a lot of heat like on off the scene. So it'll be really interesting to see how they like kind of use that, and also like whether or not she'll get a spot in Evolution, which is the all women's pay per view coming up.
Yeah, she's been on some of the promotional material, so I'm assuming she's gonna be there somewhere.
In Evolution or
On Evolution? Sorry, because we've had like some of the promotional material, at least we've seen here. She's been almost front and center.
Oh, really?
Behind, like, on a few different things I've seen. I kind of took note a few times of, like, oh, well, they've got something planned for her there, because she's, outside of, like, Rousey and, like, one or two other, she's pretty much one of the main faces they've put on the promotional stuff.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that. That's really interesting.
I don't know if that's the same your side, like, but over here, as definitely she's been one of the focuses on that stuff.
Yeah, no, I was just on the WWE site earlier because the rumors are that they're dropping Crown Jewel because of the whole journalist murder that's been going on.
All right, yeah.
And
they're just going to flat out not do it.
That's the rumor, is that they're starting to get a lot of like pressure from subscribers, and I've seen a lot of on Twitter where people are saying, like, listen, if they go through with this Crown Jewel, like, I'm done.
Yeah.
You know, like, because it's pretty, like, it's already pretty, like, shady.
The first time round, it was the greatest Royal Rumble thing. It was just, I mean, they may as well built the ring out of cash and just wrestled on top of that, because that's all it was just pure money grab, wasn't it? So,
right.
And the whole thing is like the whole of WWE is so confusing. They do so much good on one side of things by the way they're pushing the women's division, and they're doing the WWE UK thing right, and then they do something like that, and it's just like the greatest Royal Rumble and that kind of thing, and it's just they want their bread buttered on both sides almost, like,
right.
They want it both ways, and they can't do it either way quite right.
You can't exactly bolster up this women's quote unquote revolution and evolution and everything going on, and then out of the other side of your mouth, you're taking $45 million from a government that does everything in its power to suppress women's rights and women's freedoms and stuff like that. And it's like you said, you know, they want their cake and also eat it too. And it's just you can't, you know,
I mean, hopefully they do pull out of it then, if that's the big rumor. Hopefully they do, because I was amazed that it's got this far, to be honest. As soon as all that stuff came up with the journalist stuff and that, I haven't read a ton into it, but as soon as I read even the basics of it, I thought, wow, they're really going to run this show still.
And they
that was not my first thought.
Right. And they had said that they have been monitoring the situation, there's some kind of government or whatever. Yeah. They're going to enact I don't know, tariffs or whatever. But it is really interesting to kind of see what they do, because Linda McMahon's a part of the Trump administration, for better or worse. And yeah. So when you have 3 degrees of separation between a private company and the Trump administration, this has a lot of ramifications.
Yeah.
And
almost makes it matter on an even bigger scale, doesn't it? Yeah.
Right.
I've not really thought of it like that.
It really does. It is a huge thing to really think about. And, you know, sorry to the audience, I know this is a British wrestling podcast, but, you know, sometimes, you know, global government is going to be global, you know, governance, and we need to discuss these things. And for myself, as a former journalist and, you know, seeing the horror stories of journalistic suppression in the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia, as well as now where it's outright murder, from everything that we've heard from, you know, there's anonymous Turkish sources that are talking and saying that they have recordings and stuff like that, that you can hear him being interrogated and killed. It's, if WWE continues to move on, then it shows that everything they preach is purely for public relations.
Yeah. And I'm actually, now you, because I read the basics of it. I haven't read that much into it, but I mean, when you put it like that, it's amazing that they haven't already said that it's not going ahead.
And I also understand their side of it. And when I say understand, I'm not saying I condone it at all, but also in America, I don't know how it is in England, but in America, it is, when you're a publicly traded company, you have your first responsibility as a company is to your shareholders and to make a profit for them and maximize the profits. That's their first responsibility. And, you know, I'm not saying that this is right. I'm not condoning this at all. I'm actually very anti that. But I can kind of see on their side where they're we need to get this money for our shareholders. $45 million is a lot of money.
They're basically weighing if they might take that 45 million, but X amount of people boycott the network and they lose however many people over the course of however long. They're just basically trying to balance the books, aren't they, and see which one hurts them more long term.
Pretty much. And like I said, if they don't take the money, then, and they lose X amount of money and their stocks drop, then the shareholders can do a whole thing. I'm not a corporate law expert, but there are legal ramifications. And so it is this whole thing. And like I said, I would love for them not to run that show, I think. And we have a mutual friend of ours who's from that area and is has whose families have been directly impacted in negative ways by the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia and the government. So, you know, I fully support them pulling out.
Yeah, definitely.
So, all right. I'm sorry again. That was a lot of you know, political talk. This is not a political podcast. I apologize. Let's move on. And actually, this will lead us straight into staying on the WWE. They have announced that the NXT UK has a premiere date.
Yes, finally. Yeah, next this Wednesday coming, so October 17th, 8 o'clock our time, which is, what, 3 o'clock Eastern?
Yeah, 3 o'clock Eastern, noon Pacific Standard, or as I like to call it, God's time.
Is that your time on your, that's, so you're West Coast, aren't you?
Yeah.
So pay your time on Wednesday.
Pacific Standard, noon, right during my lunch, I'll get 30 minutes before kids come in and start learning so I can watch a little bit of it in my classroom, which is nice. I have a nice 4K television
in there.
I don't know how. It's a super rural school that doesn't really have a lot of money, but we have these 4K TVs that are really nice. So I'm trying to maximize that as much as possible.
Is that like where all the budget went? Like you've all still got old school chalkboards and stuff, but
it actually might. I'm not 100% sure. But so October 17th, 8 p.m. British time, Greenwich Mean. How do you feel not having to wake up at 1 in the morning to watch a show?
Yeah, I'm really happy they took in. I mean, it makes sense that they've taken into account our time and stuff. That they're doing it to fit us rather than to fit the American audience. Even though I'm sure there's going to be more American viewers just by nature of the fact that America is so much bigger in terms of population than us. But I think I don't know. It's kind of nice that they've actually considered us, because everything else, if I want to watch anything else, I've got to sit up until at least midnight usually, so before it even starts. So it's actually, it's quite nice that they've taken that into consideration.
Right. And so the NXT UK will, they're going to be showing the tapings that started when? Like June, right?
Yeah, because there was one taping before the one that I went to, which was Birmingham. There's six. So they've already got 12, and after tonight and yesterday, they've already got 18 shows in the bag, because they tape three a day. So, right. Yeah, it was June, August, and then they've just recorded some yesterday and today. So, yeah, they've done them in blocks and quite well spaced out. I don't know if that's how they're going to continue going forward to do it, or if they're going to start running shows a bit closer together once they start running out of bank shows. I'm not sure.
Yeah. So, it's going to include the NXT UK Women's Tournament.
Yep.
Right? Because they had a tournament to crown the first or the NXT UK Women's Champion.
Yeah, the tournament runs through like the first 10 episodes, I think.
Oh.
They sort of spread it out quite a bit. So, yeah, it was they did the qualifiers at the first set of live tapings, and then they actually crowned the champ at the second set.
Okay, so they'll sprinkle that through.
Yeah.
And
I don't know if they're running in order of recording. It seemed a little bit, like trying to avoid spoilers, but the Birmingham tapings that I went to, some of the stories didn't seem to run quite make sense. Like there was matches and then promos after, like later on, and some things that didn't seem to line up. So I don't think they were showing them in the order that they were recorded necessarily.
Right.
I don't know if they might try and make it seem as if they're traveling around by doing like one from the Corn Exchange, then one from Birmingham, then one from the Pavilion, and trying to make it seem like it's a constant tour or something like that. I'm not sure.
Right. Just kind of like, here's just moving from like in between the three places.
Yeah.
It'll be interesting to see if it's going to be like a piecemeal or how exactly this works.
It's an hour. They've said it's an hour every week. So, yeah, it's It's basically another NXT, isn't it? That I know it's obviously NXT UK, but they are running it as if it's another NXT show, which is really cool.
Which, and this is what I was going to bring up is, I mean, this, if you look at their Wednesday lineup now, that is stacked. That's probably the best, like, program, like, day of programming, if you look at it, like, from a quality of wrestling-wise. So you have...
Oh, definitely, yeah.
You have NXT UK, NXT, 205 Live, and the Mae Young. So that's 4 hours of wrestling.
Yeah.
That are pretty, like, diverse.
Yeah, it's I did actually wonder, because originally they were going to put it on a Thursday. They actually said it was going to be a Thursday night show at one point.
Oh, really?
I don't know why that changed and why they decided to sort of cram Wednesday full. I don't know if they're trying to just take over Wednesday as WWE day. But I don't mind it. I mean, it's because it fits a lot of time. I mean, I work later than 8 anyway, but I can chuck it on my tablet at work or whatever, and I watch it as live as I can when I can.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be really interesting to kind of see if they, like you said, if they start to maybe move the programming around a little bit once it gets settled and gains a little bit of a following. Yes. Because right now they're just, you know, anything that's not the two main shows are getting thrown in on Wednesdays. And I think it's good, but also, you know, how much of a good thing is too much before it becomes, you know, kind of...
It's almost like a fourth show, isn't it? A third show, sorry, Doug, because you've got, obviously, Raw's like, what, 3 hours?
Yeah.
SmackDown's like 2 hours. So that's like a big old show, really, still. 2 hours is still quite a long show. And then you've got 4 hours on a Wednesday.
Yeah.
Which is, like, longer than both put together if you watch all of it.
Right, and I mean, really, if you look at all four, 205 Live, maybe not 205 Live, but if you think about the Mae Young, the NXT and NXT UK, those are all kind of like its own universe.
Yeah, it's all very closely related, yeah.
Right, so like, you know, if you look at, you know, the 3 days, almost like the Marvel Cinematic Universe, quote unquote, where, you know, you have your main roster shows, so your Monday Night Raw and your SmackDown are kind of like your, you know, the movies, and then NXT is kind of like the... Netflix shows.
Yeah.
And
it's got its own continuity and its own, but it'll reference the main stuff. But that's quite a good analogy, actually.
Yeah, so it'd be interesting to see if they kind of keep that going with NXT UK, NXT proper, and like Mae Young all kind of working together.
Yeah, and I hope so.
Yeah, I hope so too. And like I said, like, I mean, from the main roster shows or from WWE proper, like, my style of wrestling that I enjoy watching is the more NXT style, which is the more indie style.
Yeah, definitely say I'm the same as well, yeah.
So it's going to be really interesting to kind of see what happens from there. And also possibly related news, World of Sport just announced that are they taping for... Okay, what's TV9? You're going to have to explain that to me.
I missed out a... piece of punctuation. It's
TV. All right.
Yeah, they've announced that they're doing a nine date tour through January and February, which will be taped for the upcoming TV series, for next year's series.
Right.
Because this series was only 6 episodes.
Okay.
It was quite a short run, but it's done really well. So they're going to be. I think they're going up to 24 for next year.
Oh.
So they're taping those on the road. It's 9 dates. They haven't announced the dates so far. They've just announced there'll be 9 live dates and that they'll be taped for TV.
Okay, and they'll be through in January or February is when they're going to be running that tour?
Yes, yeah. And there's a rumor going around that WWE have already stopped on using one of the venues that WWE regularly uses.
Oh, really?
And I also know somebody who works at another one of the venues that WWE uses, and I know that WWE have booked the dates that World of Sport asked for. Like, just booked the place to do nothing with it, yeah. So they're obviously actively targeting World of Sport at this point, because World of Sport's done better than anyone thought it was going to.
Yeah.
obviously the pilot last year was well received. They did the pilot as like a Christmas special kind of thing, and was really well received. And I think that's what, I don't think it was what started the ball rolling with the UK NXT stuff, but I certainly think it was a factor.
Yeah.
Because I think that's the first credible threat to people who watch Raw and SmackDown, because there was nothing else really to watch. You can kind of find TNA if you've got like a really obscure digital channel, you can find it, but it's not easy to get to nowadays. So there wasn't any real danger for WWE over here. So I think the World of Sport doing so well, and now they're, the six episodes they ran were all like the most watched thing on that channel for the week. On ITV for the whole week, was the most watched thing they had was World of Sport. So, And there was actually football on one of those weeks as well, which on ITV, which usually is the big draw. So that's pretty huge for them. So I think they've gone from being something to keep an eye on to being an actual threat to WWE now, from what it looks like to me.
Yeah, I think it's got them a little shook. And, you know, I think, like you said, I think it really got kind of the gears in motion for NXT UK, because before that it was just kind of like, yeah, we'll get it going, and you know, they crowned, you know, a NXT UK champion, but they never really did anything with it. And then Once that World of Sport kind of came around, then everyone was like, oh, okay, we need to kind of,
yeah, I mean, at one point the UK title was almost just something else to, just another title to have on NXT.
Mm-hmm.
Something else to give a bit of meaning to a match. There wasn't a lot more to it once the tournament was over. But gladly that's changed quite a lot now. And it's hopefully they're going to put a little bit more importance on it now going forward.
Yeah, I think it's really interesting to see exactly what happens. So World of Sport, is there still a lot of heat around there with this little bit of a break in between?
I think it might hurt it a little bit that there's such a big gap, because I think they're recording the dates in January, February, but I don't think it's back on TV until August time next year.
Mm.
But I don't think they've confirmed that yet, but I think that's around when it's going to be starting back up on TV, is around August next year. So that's almost a year break. So I don't know if they're going to do something in the meantime to try and keep it going. Now, I hope they are, because it was gaining a bit of momentum, and now it's finished, obviously. So hopefully they can do a bit more with it.
Now, is that kind of how British TV kind of works? Is instead of having like American television, where they're trying to get like 33-34 episodes in a year?
Yeah, most of our stuff, a lot of our stuff runs a lot shorter. And always has done series-wise. I mean, even if you look at, go back to stuff like Fawlty Towers, that was like, what, two seasons of six episodes?
Mm.
Or The British Office, which was like six episodes a season, things like that. Like British TV, we don't do those like 24 episodes a season shows that run for half the year very often. Most of our stuff is sort of, is done in that short form format. So, yeah, it is kind of the British way, but I think something like this needs momentum.
Mm-hmm.
So I think running those series longer, even if they just bump it up to like 12 episodes or something like that, and just keep it on TV a little bit longer, even just do some specials through that dead time where you just record like a one-off show and call it like your super show, give it a fancy name or whatever, just to keep the public interested, because I think a lot of the people who are watching that aren't necessarily watching anything else. They might pick up the Raw results or watch the YouTube cut or whatever, but I think a lot of the people watching that are just people who've got a passing interest, and I think to keep those people on board, you've got to have something for them to keep watching.
Right. And I think there's a little bit of a gap there for them to fill, because like you said, like even with the NXT UK being in British prime time, you know, I don't think that's going to be shown on television. I don't think Sky Sports.
No, it's not on TV anywhere. No.
Yeah.
No. Which I think is they've missed a bit of a trick there, actually. I think because they used to have like quite a good relationship, WWE, with like Channel 4 and a few other places. Like we never paid for pay-per-views for years here.
Yeah.
Because they're shown on Channel 4. I could watch the Royal Rumble for years and things like that live on Channel 4 for nothing when you guys are paying like $40 for it or whatever.
$50, $60,
And that was for a long, that was right through like the really hot period as well when it was like Stone Cold and like his big rise and all that. I'd never paid for a pay-per-view for a long old time. And so I would have thought there was still some sort of relationship there. And even if they put it on Channel 4 at like some unreasonable hour, the way that TV works nowadays, plenty of people would have watched it on record, not recorded it or found it on demand later and things like that. I think restricting it to the network might be they might have missed a bit of a trick there, I think, but I don't know, time will tell, I suppose.
Yeah. Yeah. I think it'll be really interesting, you know, where now instead of getting, you know, like kind of the casuals, you know, it's like you can only sell it to the hardcores, you know, that are buying buying the network.
Yeah, from what I've seen at least, I haven't seen any like mainstream advertising for it. Like there's not been adverts in papers or anything like that. So the only real way you know about it is if you're already following WWE.
Mm-hmm.
If you're following them on Twitter, Facebook, or if you've actually got the network. But I can't see passive people getting the network just to check out this one British show. I don't think it's too many steps to go through to check it out.
Yeah.
Whereas World of Sport, most people's TVs have got ITV player built in now, and you can just go on your ITV player and find it anytime you want and watch it for free.
Oh, wow. I think...
That to me is they've definitely missed a little something there, but I still think it'll do really well because there's a lot of people on the UK roster who a lot of people are interested in at the minute. So
yeah, like I think, you know, at the end of the day, when you have the UK roster like you do, like WWE does, you know, you're gonna gain a lot of interest because it does have like literally the hottest stars on, you know, in UK wrestling right now.
Yeah.
You know, I think with maybe the exception of Mark Haskins.
Yeah. Eddie Dennis was on the tapings for this weekend. That's a minor spoiler because he was already. So I'm glad Eddie Dennis is getting some work with them. I don't know what capacity he's in, but.
God, I hope
he's good. Yeah, and I really hope so too. And there's a few other guys who I've been wondering when they were going to pop back up there. And like Ligero's popped up again this weekend, and a few other guys. So
nice.
It'd be interesting to see what they do with those guys that aren't their top guys.
Kind of the mid-card, like lower mid-card, yeah.
Yeah, they're definitely building for the long term. They've got a lot of people on board now, so I don't think it's going anywhere soon unless it fails miserably, but I really can't see that happening without how hot British wrestling is at the minute.
That is true. And in regards to Ligero, I don't think they even signed him. I think he just heard that there was a wrestling show and he just showed up out of habit. And just...
Yeah, it was his 12th show that day and his 42nd that week because Ligero never stops wrestling.
He's just ever. A constant, like, in motion.
He's the hardest working man in wrestling. I genuinely think that.
I don't think there's a doubt right now that he probably has the most bookings, like, anywhere.
Yeah, didn't he do, like, 400 and something shows last year? Something ridiculous like that. Like, he just doesn't start, like, if he's, he'll have 2 or 3 days off a week that he just spends all of in the gym, and then he'll wrestle like 3 matches a day, 4 days straight.
From everything I've heard from like Smallman and like other podcasts and stuff like that, and I don't think I've ever heard one with Ligero on it. It's just people talking about Ligero's work ethic, and it just seems like once the camps get going, he just lives there and then just works every match.
Yeah, and he bolts between shows and like ducks out of one to go and do another, and then goes across from one to another. Like he plans his what shows he books around how many shows he can fit in. Like he won't just book a single show, he'll book a show by looking at what else is nearby, what shows are nearby, then he'll give them a call and get on their card, and he ends up working like 2, 3, 4 shows a day.
Jeez, it's amazing. And how he has from what I understand, like not had like like this like horrible injury. Like you say,
Yeah,
he's
I don't
relatively
think.
healthy.
Yeah, and it's not like he does safe stuff either. He's not like he doesn't wrestle a state a safe what you'd call a safe style.
Yeah.
He does like flips and dives and all kinds of ridiculous stuff. It's just, I mean, when you're inhabited by the spirit of a luchador, I suppose that's just one of the benefits is that you become indestructible.
You're a damn near superhero.
Yeah, pretty much.
So, all right. So, another thing that just got announced is Progress is going to be moving on from the Big Four English cities. So they're based in London, obviously, but they've also had some pretty good showings in Birmingham, Manchester, and what's the
Sheffield.
Sheffield? Is
Yeah.
Sheffield a pretty large? Because that's just
Yeah, pretty
outside Newcastle.
big. Yeah, it's a pretty big. It's not one of the biggest cities, but it's not far off. Like it's one of the, if you've got like your sort of Birmingham's and your Manchester's and that, it's not much of a step down size wise. It's a beautiful city as well, underrated as a city, Sheffield. I love it there.
Oh, okay. I
Yeah, it's a really cool place.
when my wife and I went over to England in February, we got in on a Wednesday. And I was trying to like figure out a way to talk my wife into driving up to Sheffield for because Aston Villa was in an away game up there,
All right, okay, yeah.
and I just realized it was just too far north. I was like, oh, that might not happen.
It's a good way up, yeah. Yes, yeah, but yeah, see, I mean, it's worth the drive just to see that. Like I say, the city, it's just a really nice city.
Yeah, next time I'm up there, I definitely want to get more to the north than what we were able to get to. But we're not talking about Sheffield right now. We are talking about Progress running the O2 Academy in Bournemouth. How do
Bournemouth.
Bournemouth?
Bournemouth.
All right.
Bournemouth. That's nearly as good as your pronunciation of Leicester.
I heard Leicester 1,000 times, like from the soccer, from the football team and Smallman being from Leicester. But for whatever reason, when I was like thinking of seeing the sign, I was like, it's Leicester. Obviously, that's how you pronounce that. Oh.
That did make me chuckle when it took me a minute to figure out where you were on about. I mean, Leicester, Leicester. I've never heard of Leicester. Oh, it's just down the road. It's Leicester. It's our fault for having them fancy English spellings, to be fair. But yeah, this is it's Bournemouth.
Bournemouth.
Or
Okay. To
yeah.
be fair, you guys love adding extra vowels to your
Yeah,
words.
it's just a fuck with tourists, man. That's all it is.
Oh,
Like we know the secret letters. We can see them in a word, like the ones that you don't really need, but we just put them in there to throw everyone else off.
I mean, as long as Progress or we don't start reviewing tours in Wales and have to start trying to figure out how to pronounce Welsh names and Welsh city names, I think I'll be fine.
It's the Bournemouth is it's their first departure, other than going to America and Germany or whatever. It's their first departure from those the main four cities that they run. And it appears to be it's another O2 Academy, so they appear to have some sort of deal worked out with the O2 places, which is really good because that there's a lot of O2 academies around the UK. So hopefully this means it's not the first or not the last place they're going to branch out to this year because the company is growing, so it makes sense that they start moving around and getting more people seeing the product. Makes sense.
So what are the O2 academies? I know like that's kind of seems like a big thing over there, but I'm not, is that just like a
It's
line of theaters or?
basically a yeah, it's a they're basically most of them are like they used to be like theaters that were repurposed into sort of mid-sized gig venues. So they're all designed primarily for bands to play at. So it's just a big room with a stage, basically. They're usually somewhere between sort of 1,000 and sort of 1,200 capacity, somewhere around
Oh,
there.
okay. Right.
Some of them go up to like 1,500, 1,800, but they're usually around the sort of 1,000, 1,200 sort of number. But yeah, there's a lot. They're just old, like they used to be old music halls and things like that, that there's no use for them anymore. So they, O2 have, which is actually a mobile phone company.
Mm-hmm.
But they've sort of branched out into other things. They own the, what was the Millennium Dome in London, which is, that was their first gig venue. And it's now a massive arena where they play all kinds of like band, like the biggest bands in the world sort of go there and play.
Oh, okay.
I saw like Metallica there, Led Zeppelin there, that sort of venue. And then they branched out from that. And now their academies, like O2 academies, are in every major city pretty much.
Oh, okay.
And they're really cool venues for wrestling because they've all got like balconies and that. So you can get a good spot on the balcony and look down on the ring, or you can kind of mill around, and it gives it that punk rock vibe because it's in a, what is basically a music venue.
Right.
It like really adds to the vibe of Progress, I think, that they play in those kind of places.
Yeah. That's, I didn't know that. I only knew O2 as they used to be the kit sponsors of Manchester United. That's the only way I knew what O2 was.
Yeah, that's what. Yeah, I know they sponsor the English rugby team as well.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, the England rugby team have been sponsored by O2 for a long time. But yeah, they've got I'm hoping that they're going to branch out a bit more because I had a quick look at where some of the academies are that they haven't been to yet. So you've got like Newcastle, Bristol, Leeds, Glasgow, Liverpool, Oxford have got one. Then they've got a couple of bigger ones as well, like the Manchester Apollo, which is, I think, 3,000 seats.
Mm-hmm.
The Brixton Academy is an O2 venue as well. So hopefully if they continue this trend of working with O2 venues, that kind of opens up a lot of possibilities for cities. I'm amazed they haven't run a show in Liverpool yet, especially with Zach Gibson being such a big part of the company. Yeah, I think it'd be interesting to see, because he's a like uber heel in Progress, but if they go to Liverpool, at least half that crowd is going to be cheering for him. So I really want to know what would happen.
If he continues to act like a heel, but just being Scouse, obviously. Well,
yeah, but it'd be a weird split because obviously the crowd's going to be, because they're Liverpool, they're going to be more leaning towards him because he's one of theirs, but he's a Liverpool fan and Liverpool's pretty much split perfectly down the middle, 50-50 Liverpool and Everton fans. Then the fans of him are then going to be re-split back the other way because some of them are Everton fans, and it'd just be chaos, to be honest. But I'd love to see it happen just to figure out what's going to happen.
On the lines of the Irish Civil War, that's still like these cities that are split football wise is,
oh, the Irish have got nothing on Liverpool and Everton. that breaks up families and all sorts of Liverpool Everton does.
I don't even know, like, because they're like, both fields are like what, like a mile away from each other or something like that?
Yeah, they're really close, yeah.
So it's like, yeah,
it happens quite a lot. You've got the same in Manchester as well. Like the Man City and Man United grounds are like, there's two massive hills opposite each other and on top of each of the two stadiums. So you can see one ground from the other pretty much. And it's the same, like in Liverpool, they're literally on either side of a park.
Oh my god,
it's like the Everton stadium, a big park in the middle, and then the Liverpool stadium on the other side pretty much.
So where does like the split happens, like sometimes like in America, like in New York between Yankees and like Mets, it just all depends on like what borough you were born in.
I don't really think it's geographical. I think it's like partly like whatever you were raised as, like if your old man's a Liverpool fan, you're a Liverpool fan. Like, you don't have a choice. That's just how it is.
Right.
Or vice versa. I don't think there's any... I might be wrong, because I've got friends of Liverpool fans, and they're probably really pissed off that I don't know. But I don't think there's a geographical split to it. I think there, especially, it's more just you're either one or the other. You kind of... It depends on your family and your upbringing. Because Liverpool is, like, the football city. Like, everybody pretty much in Liverpool is a football fan. And yeah, there's no partisan, oh, I quite like both. You like one or the other. You have to make a choice.
That's insane. I love it. I love it. It's one just another aspect of the English culture that just fascinates me.
Yeah, it's almost tribal. That's the best word to describe it, is it's like a tribal thing. You're born into whichever team.
Oh, I mean, when I was going through when I was going through college, and my minor was in anthropology, and I once was trying to talk my professor into letting me write a paper about looking at sporting rooting interests and everything through an anthropology lens. She didn't go for it, but I was really trying to push it.
Yeah,
But
that's quite a cool angle, actually. That'd be like to find out the origins of who supports who and why.
right, and then
Because
also just
there's weird things as well. Like there's certain sections of, because Wales doesn't really have many football teams that are any good, like Swansea and Cardiff, that's pretty much it. So there's really like big sections of Wales that support certain English teams, and they're really staunch about it as well. Like I'm where I'm originally from in North Wales. Everybody around there was Chelsea fans, even though Chelsea's
London.
in London. So, but there were like, but then a couple of villages down, they're all Liverpool fans. And I never really figured out. I reckon just a bloke from like Chelsea moved into the village once, and they're just like, that was it then. All right, so we'll just latch onto you and be Chelsea fans now. I can never found out where that all comes from, but there is, it's quite strange.
Well, I mean, and then if you look at it super deep, then you if you're looking at West Ham versus Millwall, then you're dealing with labor disputes and union busters, and it's a whole
It
thing.
is like football is like more than just, it's more than just a culture. It's like it's part of everything. Even if you don't I'm not a massive football fan, but I'm still always aware of what's going on in football just because it's the biggest news most of the time. Like you say, everything like politics is connected to football. There's been politicians who've lost like thousands of votes because of the team they support. Things like that. It's just like football matters more than almost anything here, which is crazy.
It's so crazy to look at from a foreigner's perspective. And I mean, the athletics over in America are just as huge. We just split it four ways, and typically it's all based geographically. We don't really have a lot of oh, I'm a leftist, so I support this team, or my father was in the unions, so we support the Raiders or whatever.
Yeah, when I came over there, I went to see baseball, basketball. I've seen all the sports live over there. Now, when I went to see the ice hockey, I managed to, or my friend managed to get us tickets. It was the New York Rangers versus New Jersey Devils, which
Oh
is
yeah.
like a huge rivalry over there,
Yeah,
I think, from what I could gather.
it's one of the closest to like actual derbies we have over here.
Yeah, but and it was like you'd have thought that the way they were screaming and shouting and that they were going to war, but then I think Rangers won 3-1, I think it was something like that. But then after it all just stopped. Like once the game finished, they were all just best mates afterwards, which that doesn't happen here with football. Like you would have thought it was like life or death, but as soon as the game was finished, everyone just went about their merry way and that was it. But here, like a loss in a football match can ruin somebody's day or even their week. Which it didn't seem quite like that over there. It's kind of odd.
I it can be. I know my dad growing up, he would if the Raiders lost, he would be in a bad mood till Wednesday. And
Oh,
I kind of get it. I've gotten better now that I'm married, but when I was single, I used to be a lot like that. And now it's just I get real disappointed. I was watching the Raiders game before we started recording. They're actually playing in London today, which I think is hilarious, because right now it would be like if the English Football League or Premier League was like, hey, we want to expand our influence, we're going to send West Ham United to go play a game in New York and hope people get interested. It's like, is this the brand of football we want to like give out to the world?
Yeah.
But yeah, so it's and so I was like not in the greatest of moods earlier today. So I was like, all right, let's talk about wrestling and get happier. And there is watch the segue, and there is nothing that makes me happier than watching old World of Sport. There is something about it that I love. In today's throwback match, we have Pat Roach versus Wild Angus. And Pat is a West Midlands legend, is he not?
Yeah, Birmingham boy. Yeah, he's West Midlands legend. That's the best way of putting it. He's Birmingham born and raised and an absolute legend of the British wrestling and acting scene, which is pretty cool.
I was going to say, one of the funniest things I saw today when I was watching this match to kind of get ready for it, on YouTube, it was like the next video thing that would like pop up and it would like automatically run, was a scene where he fought Sean Connery and the uploader was the Brummy Boy.
All right.
And I thought that was hilarious.
Yeah, because he was in, it was the bad Sean Connery one, weren't it? I can't remember what it was, though. But, yeah, the Bond movie that he was in.
Right.
Never Say Never Again, which is, like, the only, in my opinion, the only, like, not great Sean Connery Bond.
Who's your James Bond?
Sean Connery is my favorite. I do really like Daniel Craig as well.
Okay. That doesn't make... I grew up with Brosnan, but I never really got into it like James Bond wise, but yeah. Daniel Craig is kind of where I was like really got invested into James Bond, so that like that's my James Bond. But
yeah, like Pierce Brosnan was a bit too hammy for me. Like he leant more towards the cheesy side of Bond, which I didn't really like as much. Sean Connery just got to deliver all the best Bond lines, I thought. I really liked Sean Connery. I do like Roger Moore as well, but Sean Connery's always been my favorite.
Right. So, Pat Roach, legend not only in acting, but also wrestling. And in this match, this is a super heavyweight tournament?
Yes. Yeah, look, some sort of odd tournament, yeah.
And we have him facing Wild Angus from Scotland.
Yeah, which is a great gimmick. Like he's got a really cool gimmick. He looks like a proper wild man.
And what was interesting, and I would really like we talked about trying to find, you know, the rest of this tournament if we can, is Giant Haystacks is actually eliminated in the first round.
Yes.
Which is kind of insane when you think about like Giant Haystacks is like one of the biggest draws in wrestling in British wrestling. Yes. For him to be eliminated in the first round is pretty interesting.
I think figuring out like when this was from, I think he was kind of winding down his career because he went over to Japan for a little while. So I think this might have been at that point where he was kind of winding down here and going abroad for a bit. Mm. He was usually top of the card, Haystacks, so that was quite a shock, actually. Haystacks was the first live main event I ever saw. And
yeah.
That dude, to me, was like, that's what hooked me on wrestling, was like, that dude was just monstrous.
Larger than life?
Yeah, like, I'd never seen anyone that big in my life when I saw him. Like, I couldn't believe he was a human being. He was so huge to, like, 5-6-year-old me.
Mm-hmm.
I'd book him. I guess he was on a downturn at that point.
Yeah. And
this was at the time when Pat Roach was huge as well, because he did the acting alongside the wrestling. Like, they weren't two separate careers. He did both.
Oh!
He carried over his nickname from Arvida Saint Pat into wrestling. He became Bomber, and he was called Bomber in Alvida Zane.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, the two careers were simultaneous rather than like he went into acting after wrestling. He actually did both at the same time.
So that really would have lent to like his drawing power and everything like that. And what did you think of this match as a match?
Yeah, I really liked it, yeah. It's just, again, like we had last week, it's just proper classic British wrestling. The one thing I really did like, not to jump ahead, but I love the finish, his finishing move, which was like a hands-free fireman's carry kind of thing.
Oh, yeah.
Really, really cool. But it didn't look like a finisher. Like, it's amazing what used to finish matches.
Right.
Because that'd be like an opening move now.
Well, I think that, I mean, even in the NWA and, you know, like the American styles in the 1980s and stuff, like, you know, the, you know, your high spot was a vertical suplex. But I thought the match was really cool. And like I said, I love the sport, like, you know, like World of Sport and that sporting feel to it where, you know, the public warnings is, this is the first time I saw a match with a public warning and it was amazing. Yes.
Well, I did a little bit of research last week and public warnings came up in it because we were talking about last week about the fast 10 count.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, I found something called, this is basically, if you look back through British wrestling history, there was a point where in Greater London and for a little while across the whole of the UK, professional wrestling was banned.
Mm.
Like completely. It was viewed as basically viewed as rigged betting.
Mm-hmm.
So because the matches were predetermined, it was seen as this like dodgy carny thing where they were screwing people out of money by rigging the matches. So it was banned. And to get pro wrestling unbanned again, they created something called the Admiral Lord Mount Evans rules.
Yes.
Which is the rule set that we saw last week with the fast 10 count. And it also has the public warning system, which if you break a rule to try and make it seem basically like you're behaving yourselves and you're policing yourselves, if someone breaks a rule, the ref calls it out as a public warning and it's announced as a public warning and you get two and then your third one you're disqualified. But they very quickly turn that into a heel tactic to use your public warnings to your advantage because any rule that you break is just a public warning.
Right.
So if you hit somebody with a foreign object, it was just a public warning. You couldn't be instantly disqualified.
You had three.
It was always like three and out. So they started using it as a gimmick. So the thing they introduced to let them wrestle again actually ended up being something that made it more wrestling than it ever had been before.
It's ironic how that kind of works, but I loved it. I loved Angus kind of working the closed fist punches when the referee was on the other side, and then when he was being warned about it, he was like, "No, it was the forearm."
Yeah, he kept arguing that it was a forearm. Yeah, especially like some of those punches, like the only way you'd be able to make that forearm is if you had no bones, like to bend his arms around, but the ref was just beautifully oblivious.
Yeah, I love this match. It was fairly short, 8 minutes, 50 seconds, and I thought Pat Roach looked amazing in it.
Yeah, he's so cool. He's one of those classic, the very classic British shape, like he just feel like a brick shit house, basically.
Well, I was gonna say he looked like a proper tough man.
Yeah, he's so jacked up, and he is a shoot tough guy. Like he was a judo champion.
Oh, okay.
He was a professional boxer. That was before the wrestling, and then he was a wrestler, and he was picked up via. He was seen on World of Sport and sort of headhunted to start. They used him as like a henchman in a few different movies. He was in Clockwork Orange first. That was his first movie.
Oh, wow.
And he was the red-bearded bouncer in Clockwork Orange. I don't know when the last time you saw that, if you have seen
that. Not in a long time.
But he's kind of I think he does have a line, but he's more or less blinking, you miss it. But yeah, that was his sort of, I think it was Stanley Kubrick who actually spotted him on World of Sport or some other wrestling show, and that's how he was found for sort of movies and TV and things.
Hmm.
Which is pretty cool. And then he went on to be, they used him as kind of, almost like a joke. He was a henchman in all three of the original Indiana Jones movies.
Oh, wow.
And he was dispatched in various different ways in those three movies. And I think it was almost like a joke that you were supposed to recognize that he was the same guy.
Oh, right.
Which is kind of cool. But yeah, he's just like a genuine legend of British pro wrestling. Are you aware of Alvida Zane Pett?
I'm literally just looking this up right now, and I have no idea what I'm looking at, other than there's a guy from the Harry Potter movies I kind of recognize, and who was also in the Damned United, which is one of my
favorite.
That's
favorites. Right, yeah.
Yeah. He was like the assistant coach. But other than that, I have no idea what it is.
I mean, if you were to watch it, you genuinely would need something to translate like a lot of what's said in it, because it's Geordie. Like, oh, they're all Geordies, which okay. is what the pet part comes from. And they're a bunch of Geordie builders who go to Germany to, I can't remember, it's been so long since I've seen, I think they go to build a bridge. But it's full of like Geordie sayings. And I mean, I work with a Geordie guy, and half the time I don't understand what he's saying, and I've worked with him for years. Like, there's so many little, like, weird little sayings and stuff that they use. And it's like, I honestly think it'd be almost undecipherable for the most part if you were to watch it. But if you can find some of it on YouTube or something, just to get an idea of it, it was a really, like, super popular show.
Yeah.
When it was first on. And he was a big part of the show, actually, Pat Roach. He played Bomber, but I can't remember what his full name was. I'm just trying to have a quick look now. I always just knew it was Bomber when he used to watch it. Oh, Brian Bomber Busbridge he played.
Okay.
And he was a big enough character that they actually had a farewell episode for him. Like, when they kind of brought the series back for like a, I think it was like a few episode run. And they actually had a farewell episode because he passed away before they came back.
Oh, wow.
But yeah, he was like, he was a genuine, like, TV star and movie star, and a stalwart of British professional wrestling.
So he's just a British pop culture icon.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah.
Oh wow, that's awesome. I didn't know about that. And I mean, it sounds like
a cool hidden backstory almost. Like, that's kind of a cool thing. I thought that he had that. That's why when I found the video, I was like, oh yeah, that'd be great, because he does have so much to him besides pro wrestling, but he was genuinely one of the best British professional wrestlers as well. And it wasn't even really his full-time job, which made it really cool.
Just something he dabbled in as a hobby.
Yeah, almost. Yeah. It did get to that point where he always kept his hand in wrestling. Like, even when there was a period sort of through the 80s and 90s where late, like sort of early to mid 90s, where he was doing loads of movies and stuff, but he'd always wrestle still. He never really stepped away from it. He'd always, like, even if he'd only, like, turn up and do just the odd show here and there, he'd always turn his hand back to wrestling whenever he had the chance. So he seemed to have a genuine love for pro wrestling, which is cool.
That's that, you know, we talked about this last week, where that's that British working class mentality of never forget your roots and always, you know, you got to always make the next town.
Yeah.
And you always got to work.
I almost think it might have just been the case of, like, he's got a couple of days off and someone just said, like, oh, stand you up a few pints on the bar if you pop in and do 10 minutes. like that'd be enough to get a lot of people to turn up and do a couple of minutes work just for a couple. I mean, I'd always turn up anyway and do 10 minutes work for a couple of pints. I don't think it'd take much more than that, to be honest.
I've done a lot less for... you know, I've done a lot more than 10 minutes for a six pack. So,
yeah.
So real quick, Geordie, that's Newcastle, right?
Yes.
All right. Yeah. You have to, again, forgive my ignorance of.
Yeah, it's Geordie. There's for such a small island, we have so many like crazy, like regional accents and dialects and stuff. But Geordie is one of the hardest to decipher.
And I
say that with love, genuinely. Like, they're some of the nicest people in Britain are in Newcastle, but they are incredibly hard to understand sometimes.
I forget what I was listening to, but God dang it. Sorry. The final score from the Seattle Raiders game just came through and we lost by a lot. Again, West Ham of the NFL. So, yeah, I forget what I was watching, but someone was saying that like the reason why a lot of English actors have an easier time coming to America and with the American accent is because to get jobs in England, you have to master like 50 different dialects and 50 different accents just to be, like believable from like, oh yeah, from Liverpool. So I need to say like this word correctly.
Yeah, that makes sense actually. Yeah, I mean, most people can do like I can talk in most accents, and I can understand people from most places up and down the country just from making friends and traveling around. You learn the little words that they use in different places, and I mean, we have for example, the big British debate ever since I was a kid is, like a bun that you'd have a burger in.
Yes.
Every single town and city has a different name for that. So where I'm from, it's a batch, right?
Batch?
A batch,
BATCH.
yeah.
Okay.
It's a batch, but if you go up north, there's places that call it a cob, or a bap, or a bun, or a barm cake,
What? None of
or
this
like there's
makes sense.
yeah,
None of it.
people will fight to the death over what it's called.
Yeah,
I'm personally will not be changed in my view that it's called a batch, because that's what it's called. You go down the chippy, you get a chip batch.
I
But if I went to
understood
Man
all those words, just none of it in that context.
if you go you go to the fish and chip shop, you have a chip.
Right.
You wouldn't ask for a chip bap, you'd ask for a chip batch. But if I went up to Manchester and asked for a chip batch, I'd ask you how many in the batch, because it's like a batch of something.
Oh my
So
God.
it's like, because they have a barm cake up there, or sometimes a cob. Like it's and that's just one thing. There's loads of stuff that's like that. Like it
I
does take
don't.
like so you have to learn as you go. So the more you travel around, the more you learn, basically.
I think that's crazy because in America, our dialect, it's all like, for the most part, split up by region. And
Yeah.
there's like, within that, there's like, small differences. But for the most part, like, how I say, like, oh, I want a soda versus how you would say that in the Midwest or in the South is completely different. The biggest difference between that and England is I'm talking thousands of miles, and
Yeah.
you're literally within like from here to Sacramento, like where I live, which is about 90 miles north of Sacramento in California. Like our dialects are the same,
But
where
even if you look,
in
the one I always point,
90 miles in England, you just went through five different dialects.
yeah, like the one I always point to is like Manchester and Liverpool are really close together, but they sound so different. Like there's not, there's so many different words and little things that they use differently, and I said Newcastle isn't that far from either of those, and then again, like Geordie sound totally different, and then you go up just over the border and all the Scots sound totally different from everyone else,
Oh, the Scots, that's a whole nother.
and then you even break it down even more, like you go over to Ireland, and depending on, you can tell what part of Ireland someone's from by their accent, or you can tell what part of Wales somebody's from by their accent. Like someone from North Wales sounds totally different from somebody from like Cardiff, South Wales.
Really, that's
So yeah,
it's
there's
amazing.
a lot to learn. But you grow up with it over here, so it's you
It's part of it.
get used to it. Yeah, it's just part of life. But I can understand when someone from the outside looking in just can't get their head around how it works.
I was like, I can hear it a little bit, like when like obviously when Zach Gibson talks versus the way Eddie Dennis talks versus the way
Yeah.
like someone else or even Jimmy Havoc talks. Like I can hear the differences, but I don't know what I'm listening to. you know, yeah. I don't quite understand like the code switching that's happening. But oh, anyway, that's a whole another conversation for another time. Maybe one of these days we'll have a full breakdown of all the different dialects in British wrestling.
Probably do a whole show just on that, to be fair.
Like, that would literally
get a good like 12, 14 weeks out of that, probably.
That would honestly probably be one of my favorite things we'd ever do. I would love to break that down. Regardless, I think that's going to be it for this week. We're about an hour and 15 in, so I think that's about a good time to go ahead and call it. I know you need to go spend time with your lovely fiance.
Going to go and have a couple of whiskeys, and she's going to watch the Mae Young Classic with me. She's going to get really into it, actually. I found that's a gateway in.
Last night I was watching the last week's episode with my wife when we got back from a little bit of a date night, and I think that was the first time she didn't complain about it. So
yeah.
So it usually is a nice little
I get away with progress in NXT. That's about it usually. So yeah, it's nice to have something else for her to get into.
Nice, nice. All right. Well, I think that's going to be it for this week. We'll talk to you guys next week. Oh, before we leave, though, let's get a few plugs in. You can find Tack Brown
At Tack Brown.
You can,
on Twitter.
You can find me on Twitter at Foilson. You can find the show at Yankin Pod. Yankin Court Pod?
Yeah, Yankin Court Pod, yeah.
And then you can find us, if you want to drop us an email, you can do that at yankinincourtpodcast@gmail.com. And as always, we want to give shout-outs to Evan Cronenberg at The Savage Stash. Find him for all your vintage merchandise needs. Two Black Marks, who just had a great did you listen to this week's episode?
Yeah I did I got a mention on that, actually.
You did. Lawrence good brother Lawrence was on there giving American African-American view. He was at Wembley, gave his view on it. I thought they had some pretty good observations. And
yeah, it was good to meet him as well, actually. I get a bit of a kick out of like meeting international friends at things like that, and yeah, it was pretty cool.
It is kind of interesting to like, we're like, oh, I only know him by like still images on Facebook or whatever, or Twitter, and then to meet them in person, like when we met, it was a whole nother thing. And then also check out Radio Strong Style, one of our couple of our good friends, as they continue to break down New Japan.
Yeah, really good show too.
Yeah, it's a really good show. They're, you know, we like to consider them our sister podcast, and you know, go ahead and keep Justin Good busy as he continues to produce all three. So, but other than that, I think that's about it. I know I got to get to the pumpkin patch, you know, to celebrate Halloween and all. So.
Already?
Oh, it's...
You make a month out of everything, don't you?
Oh, America, we love our holidays. What can I say? And so there's something about being white and loving Halloween in America that just everyone does.
Yeah.
So I will talk to you next week, bud.
Okay, man. Speak to you soon.
All right, talk to you later.